Good afternoon. This is the Chorus Call conference operator. Welcome, and thank you for joining the CIR First Half 2021 Results Conference Call. As a reminder, all participants are in listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. Should anyone need assistance during the conference call, they may signal an operator by pressing star and zero on their telephone. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Rodolfo De Benedetti, Chairman of CIR. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to this conference call on H1 results. I will briefly go through the H1 presentation and then leave time for Q&A. I would like to start on page six with the P&L. I will comment the overall numbers and the holding company side, and then I'll do the comments for KOS and Sogefi later. As you can see, there has been a pickup in revenues compared to H1 last year, which was partly affected by the pandemic. In terms of top line, we are in line with 2019, about 1 billion euro in consolidated sales. EBITDA is up on a consolidated number to 172 million, with 17% of revenues, which is better than H1 2019. EBIT comes in at 66 million. The financial result is -11 million, which is comprised of the cost of financing and IFRS 16 accounting for the operating businesses, which are negative numbers, which are netted with the net positive return on the financial assets of the holding company, which has been 12.5 million for the first half. Taxes, 18.5 million, and this amounts to a net result from continuing operation of +23.5 million against 9 million in 2019 and a -27 million last year. See it in another way, the contribution from KOS, and we'll see later the KOS numbers, has been basically flat in terms of our share of the net earnings of KOS in H1. The contribution of Sogefi has been +14 million compared to -11.7 million last year and +4.5 million in H1 2019. Holding company cost, the holding company results is a +9.3 million, which benefit from a good result on the financial assets, 12.5 million, and lower general holding company costs in line with what we told you last year in terms of the reduction of the fixed cost of the holding company. On page seven, you have the breakdown of the net financial position. There's been an increase or a decrease of net debt from 100 million at the end of December last year to a -41 million, where holding company is up to 405 million at the end of June. This benefited from the positive returns. The net reduction in cost is mainly due to disposal of real estate, both last year and this year, and the disposal of Medipass in the second part of last year. Sogefi's net financial position has been pretty flat with a good operational cash generation. You have the numbers including IFRS 16 on the bottom end of the page, and you have the bridge from the end of December to the end of June, where, as you can see, operating cash flow was the main positive contributor to the change. On page eight, you have the key balance sheet numbers. No major changes. Sogefi's book value has increased because of the result. Fixed assets are mainly the real estate assets of the company. Private equity is the mark-to-market at the end of June of the portfolio. We started with 56 million. We invested 3.5 million of new money. We cashed in 9.5 million from existing investment, and we had a fair value adjustment positive 8.5 million. The net of this is 58.4 million. The other investments was affected by a slight write-down on the JV 5% stake, given H1 results. The net cash at the holding company at the end of the period was 4.405 million compared to 391 million at the end of last year. Going now to comment on the costs and Sogefi results. Page 11, starting with costs. H1 sales 325 million. This compares to 310 million same period of last year. EBITDA up to 67, almost 68 million, compared to 58 million. You can see both EBITDA and EBIT. I need to point out here that in the EBIT and EBITDA number, there are about 12.5 million of non-recurring gains in H1 2021, and this is related to the disposal of some real estate assets. Absent that, you have a significant decline in profitability, both from H1 2019 as well as H1 2020. We also need to point out that we had a total of 18 million of public, how do you say this, sorry, public contributions, both in Germany, the bulk of it, as well as in Italy, through a combination of a compensation of lost revenues and a compensation of higher costs due to the pandemic. This has contributed. It's difficult to forecast going forward how long those subsidies will stay in place. We have benefited in H1 from that, but we don't know how long we're going to benefit from that. Better financial results compared to last year because of lower net financial position, slightly higher taxes, and this brings the net result of 0.4 million. In the period, we have concluded debt refinancing. Between SACE, which we mentioned last year we were negotiating, which was completed, and the real estate medium-term loans, we concluded 170 million of new financing, which puts us in a strong liquidity position and with a reasonably safe situation going forward in terms of complying with covenants. Because of the sale of some real estate assets, the gross book value of real estate goes down to 189 million compared to 211 at the end of 2019. Last year and this year, we sold some real estate and fair value, which you're probably more interested in, goes down from 270 million to 228 at the end of June. We don't give specific guidance for the year, but what we are seeing is, as we have commented in the last few months, is that the lower occupancy rate of nursing home Italy is extremely low in terms of making it back. We have seen some signs in the last couple of months to the tune of 100-200 guests a month. But we believe that it's probably going to take us the whole of next year to go back to pre-COVID level, absent obviously any fourth wave or any further disruption, which we hope will not take place. But visibility is somewhat limited. As you all know, there's been growing contagion cases in most European countries, including Italy, in the last few weeks. So we hope that this is temporary. We have very few cases presently in our structures. Most of the guests and most of the operators are vaccinated. But as you can see in other countries, this does not preclude a growth in cases. We have seen good revenues. So revenues are up almost 20% on last year. Unfortunately, some of those revenues have lower profitabilities. They're linked to COVID type of treatments with lower tariffs. And I would say that in Italy, and this is true across the board, nursing homes and rehab, there has been a substantial increase in labor costs. We renewed some of the collective contracts which were under negotiations since many years and which hadn't really moved in the last few years. And so from last year to this year, we have a fairly significant higher cost of labor in those activities. Acute care is pretty stable. It went back to where it was in 2019. Germany is in line with our plans. So we're reasonably satisfied with the performance of Germany. It's in line with the investment case we underwrote when we made the acquisition 2 years ago, with the inclusion of public subsidies. So I think here the challenge and the question mark is how long those public subsidies are going to stay. And obviously they'll go away sometime, and hopefully that will coincide with a pickup of the activity. The occupancy rate has been much less affected, as you know, in Germany compared to Italy, but still there has been some effect. And lastly, India, which is a leftover from the diagnosis activity, which we sold last year for what Europe is concerned. This is a non-core asset. It has performed reasonably well in the first 6 months of the year. And as you know, this is an asset that we plan to divest. On page 13, you have a comparison quarter by quarter for the whole group and for the different businesses, where you can see in graphic terms the numbers that I illustrated earlier. In terms of P&L on page 14, here you have a breakdown of the Italian business, the German business, and the Indian assets. So you can see the evolution of margins that I already commented on. Again, in H1 this year, it's important to note those 12.5 million of non-recurring impact from the real estate sale, which produced some capital gains, which are clearly non-recurring. And, without that contribution, as I said, the business is break-even. It's loss-making this year, particularly affected by Nursing Home Italy, where the occupancy rate has fallen about 30 points to its lowest point, and it's making it back, but it's kind of slow. So Sogefi, on page 15, Sogefi had a very good first half, particularly good Q1, still good Q2, less good than Q1, and a bunch of non-recurring positive elements in H1, which produced a very good net result of 21.4 million. EBIT is up to 49 million. So we're very satisfied by the performance. All the geographic areas contributed to the growth in sales. We outperformed the automotive production in every one of those markets. The gross fixed costs were down by 22 million compared to H1 19. This is 16% less, and this is what we told you last year. The company was really busy in 20, going through this massive fixed cost reduction program, which we think was very important because it will be a structural positive going forward. So EBITDA was up to  16.1%. We did not experience in H1 negative effect from higher raw material prices that we are seeing. So we haven't yet experienced that, but we will experience that in H2. So as we did in the Sogefi press release last week, we caution against extrapolating the first half numbers into the second half. That's not going to happen. So second half results are going to be significantly below first half for basically two reasons. One is higher raw material prices will kick in the second part of the year, and that'll be meaningful. And a bunch of non-recurring items that we recorded in H1 will not be, at least at this stage, are not forecasted to be there in the second half. We think that also car production is probably going to be less buoyant in the second half, particularly in some markets. What is important is the work we did on the fixed cost. We also divested a bunch of marginal assets in Brazil, in Argentina, and in Spain in the last few months, which were generating losses. And so that will, going forward, be a positive impact. On page 16, you have a quarterly breakdown of revenues on a consolidated basis, as well as geographic area. You also have a comparison with the market in H1, where, as you can see, we consistently did better than the market in every geographic area. So I think performance in H1 was definitely positive. And in terms of performance by division, there is a fairly mixed picture there because we had a very good H1, particularly in Air and Cooling and Filtration in terms of margins, both on last year but also on 2019. So a significant progress there. We still have a very challenging situation in Suspension where margins are almost zero. And so we think that by far the most challenging situation in our portfolio today is related to the Suspension division. That is the division which is the most exposed to Europe, is the most exposed to the rising raw material prices, particularly steel prices, and has the most rigid P&L in terms of cost. And so that is where most of the attention of the new CEO is going right now. But that exercise will take time, and so we think for the next few quarters it's going to be challenging. Lastly, as I mentioned at the beginning, we had a good first half in terms of the financial assets results. All the asset classes that we own in our treasury perform well, both the fixed income component as well as the equity component, the hedge funds and the private equity part. So it was a good first half, and obviously that's more difficult to forecast quarter by quarter, and it will I think second half performance would really depend on market performance. I will pause here and open it up to your questions.
Excuse me, this is the Chorus Call conference operator. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their telephone. To remove yourself from the question queue, please press star and two. Please pick up the receiver when asking questions. Anyone who has a question may press star and one at this time. The first question is from Martino De Ambroggi of Equita. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good evening, everybody. Three questions on costs. The first, if you could elaborate a bit more on the trend of occupancy. You mentioned some figures, but just to have a better understanding on how the occupancy rate is progressing both in Italy and in Germany. Second question on the occupancy rate. I thought the rehabilitation in Italy could have been able to return to full occupancy, or at least to go quicker than the 69% occupancy, if I'm not wrong, I saw in one of your slides. So I thought the recovery in rehab could have been much, much quicker. The third question is how much of the compensations coming from Italian regions or German government received in the first half of this year? Because I understand that the 12.5 million euro are just referring to real estate divestiture. So,
okay. I will maybe start from this last point and then ask Michele to comment on the occupancy. So the total in H1 is 18 million compensation between Germany and Italy. And
Eighteen. Okay.
And I think 2 million of those related to Italy have been received in this year, but were related to last year. But from an accounting standpoint, we received them this year, and so we had to book them this year. But the relative period on which they were calculated was 2020. Do you want to comment on?
Still on this reimbursement, out of the 18, 11 is related to Germany. And in Germany, they compensate both for lost occupancy and for extra costs. So more or less half and half of these 11 come from occupancy and costs. And the support of the public sector has been confirmed until September. And then still to be confirmed or not from September to the end of the year. However, the rules were quite clear from the beginning and quite predictable in terms of what would be reimbursed and how. In Italy, the situation is very different. So there was no clarity. There was very little guidance from the central government, and the regions moved in a very diverse way. So some reimbursing some types of costs, some other types of costs. In general, no compensation for lost revenues in Italy. So we're talking about mainly cost reimbursement for safety equipment, which was extraordinary cost for costs. However, as I said, it is very difficult to predict whether there will be more, whether this is going to be it in Italy. And so there is not a lot to plan about. The reason why we didn't include this in the extraordinary is because it is just a partial compensation of extra costs that we sustained. If we isolated those reimbursements, we would then have to isolate a much higher number in terms of extra costs that we had to sustain. With regard to occupancy, there was a very different pattern in Italy and Germany. Italy saw three waves of decline connected to the three waves of COVID. So first one in March last year, then there was another decline, quite substantial, in November, December. And then the third wave was not actually a big drop, but it was a flat curve as opposed to a recovery that we had envisaged at the end of last year when we were planning. And so that we stayed with that rock bottom occupancy that you see here the average on page 12 of 66% until basically the end of April, and only May and June we started having a few percentage points per month. So it's very early to say whether this is going to be seasonal or if it will accelerate or not. So for the time being, we have no visibility to predict when we're going to get to full occupancy again. So the best estimate we can do right now is that it will take until the end of the next year. In Germany, the drop was much less. So around seven points to the bottom. Because the drop was much less in 2020, and we had a significant drop instead in autumn 2020 in winter. Even also in Germany, we were witnessing some recovery starting May, and then in June, although with a slightly lower slope than in Italy, also because the starting point is not so bad as in Italy. Rehab is a different mechanism. Occupancy is not very relevant to predict, or at least it's not the only parameter to predict the revenues and the profitability even more. Rehab is composed of very different services, which have very different revenues per day and very different margins per day. During the COVID, the most affected services were those coming from the hospital activities, so the rehabilitation post-surgery mainly, and those were disrupted not only once last year, but again twice this year. So that's why you can't see a recovery in first half of 2021. There is, of course, more reactivity, but we have had two additional waves of hospital, not blockade, but significant reduction of activity in hospitals. And on top of that, this up and down makes it very hard to plan resources, to have an efficient operation, and therefore the impact on margins is even more than just the impact on the top line. So yes, we think that rehab is going to recover earlier, but that didn't happen in the first half.
Well, if I may I ask you exactly how much was the run rate of occupancy recovery, occupancy rate recovery in May and June, just to have an idea of what is the trend?
A couple of percentage points per month.
Okay. This is in Italy only?
Yes, in Germany a bit less.
Okay. And the last question is on Sogefi. Now that the operating profitability, the operating performance is improving, am I right in assuming that an M&A and a business combination, whatever, becomes more likely, or nothing is changing?
No. Well, we have nothing that we foresee for the time being. We are really, busy working on the operations. I mentioned the fixed cost reduction plan. We have a new CEO since a few months. He's, very busy with the suspension division, which is the biggest challenge, as I said, that we have right now. And so for the time being, we're fully focused on really optimizing the performance of the group before we embark on, any M&A opportunity, which we don't exclude down the road, but it's nothing imminent.
Okay, thank you.
As a reminder, if you wish to register for a question, please press star and one on your telephone. The next question is from Daniele Ridolfi of Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon to everybody. I have a few questions from my side. The first question is on the share buyback. I was wondering if you can provide an update on the share tender to the partial tender offer with the most recent data. They also would like to understand what could be the destiny of the treasury shares once the buyback will be completed, if you are considering the cancellation of the shares, and eventually what could be the potential timing for the cancellation. Second question on the use of cash. The net cash position at holding level should remain above 300 million euro even after the buyback, assuming 80 million euro spending. So what could be the strategy in the use of net cash going forward? I was wondering if you have identified some potential M&A targets in healthcare sector, or if you're willing to invest in new businesses, or if you are thinking about an additional dividend. If you can elaborate a bit on this point, please.
Yes, okay. On the buyback, we don't think is useful or meaningful to provide indications of share tenders up to now. As you know, people tend to tender their shares at the end of the period. So the tender offer expires next Thursday, the 29th, and so we will promptly communicate the results as soon as the offer expires. But I think it would be misleading today to give any indication, and we don't need to, and we don't think it's appropriate to give that indication. In terms of the cancellation, when we proposed this transaction to the board, board and previously to the shareholders meeting, we did not specify that the buyback was done with the purpose of canceling those shares. And so we want to keep total flexibility about what we will do of those shares. And so we don't have any predetermined plan to cancel those shares, and therefore there is no timing related to it. The reason why we do this, as we said publicly, is that we believe it is, in the interest of all the shareholders to do buybacks, to buy back our own shares. We decided to do it through the, the instrument of the tender offer. We think this is more transparent and more rapid, and therefore in the best interest of all the shareholders. But as we did when we proceeded with buybacks in the market, those were not deemed to be to cancel the shares, and the same is true this time. In terms of the use of cash, I don't really have much else or new to tell you about the use of cash. We said consistently in the last few years that we were not planning to add new assets or new sectors to our portfolio, and that we would focus on the existing assets with a particular focus on the healthcare sector, because that is where we see potentially most opportunities to grow the business, which we did a couple of years ago with the German acquisition. We are continuously screening external growth opportunities in that sector. We have done it in the past. We will continue to do it. The timing, the size, the pace is difficult to forecast because it depends on finding, the right opportunities at the right price, with the right fit with what we own. We don't want to just grow for the sake of growing, but we need to find assets that fit well into our footprint. And so, we are continuously looking at opportunities. We hope in a way that the challenging situation of this market could lead to more, opportunities for us to grow externally. But that is, again, difficult to forecast in advance. And, as we have done in the past, in terms of rewarding our shareholders, we will continue to use a mix of buybacks and/or dividends, depending on, the situation of the market and what we believe is most attractive for the shareholders. We thought this year, as we said, that the most attractive course of action was buying back our own stock because of the confidence that we have long term on our portfolio of assets, despite the challenging situation that both companies have been going through in the last 18 months, I would say. But we are here for the long term, and so we believe that those are the moments where one should step up. And so that is what we have done, and I think you could pretty much assume that we're going to continue doing for the next few years what we've done over the last few years.
Okay, thank you.
For any further questions, please press star and one on your telephone. The next question is a follow-up from Martino De Ambroggi of Equita. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. During your speech, you mentioned that the cost of labor is up following the renegotiation of the contract. Could you quantify an overall impact on the P&L? And follow up on this, what's the potential normalized profitability once the normal life is back for costs. In the sense, I have an estimate of 1-2 percentage point of lower profitability compared to the old costs pre-pandemic. I don't know if it is a reasonable assumption. Two more questions. One is on the Indian activities, if there is any news concerning the divestiture. And on the opposite side, on the M&A opportunities in terms of acquisitions, have you enough financial flexibility to take advantage from some opportunities which could arise, or you are totally frozen on the acquisition side?
Okay, so I would maybe talk about the Indian divestiture and the last question, the acquisitions, and leave Michele on the impact of the higher labor costs. The Indian divestiture is, we said when we sold Medipass last year, we had to retain the Indian asset because the buyer was not willing to buy it, and so we said that even though we think it's a sound asset and actually is performing pretty well right now, but that clearly without being in that business as we were before, it doesn't really make sense for us to be present just in India, and so that this would be a divestiture that we would complete as soon as market would stabilize. And we could find the right opportunity to extract the right price out of that asset. So I cannot give you, more precise indication of my timing, but, it's a relatively minor asset in terms of size, but it's certainly one that we will look to divest as soon as we find the right opportunity. In terms of acquisitions, we are not at all frozen. We are continuously screening the market for acquisitions. We have today, financial flexibility within the cost balance sheet. We have a liquid balance sheet. As I said earlier, we have refinanced a significant portion of our existing debt with new debt, new maturities. And so we have both within costs the financial flexibility to look at acquisitions, but also should more capital be necessary to finance those acquisitions, we have the willingness to use our balance sheet as chair to support costs in doing that. And so, we're open for business. We just need to find the right candidates.
With regard to the cost of labor, as Rodolfo mentioned before, the labor contract in this sector have been frozen for many years. In last year, there was a renewal of one of the three labor contracts that we used. However, it's the one that we that has the lowest impact on the total cost of labor. The other two, which are more relevant for us, have not been renewed yet. So that's going to be probably a topic for 2022, although we will certainly need to expect some form of increase. It's too early to say how much, and also how much of that will be covered by the regions through increase of tariffs, which we would expect at least in part to happen. The big increase in the cost of labor this year, on top of the first renewal, which I just mentioned, was more of a contingent nature because, especially in the nurses segment, the public sector has a very large number of nurses to cope with the emergency. So just to give you some examples, they had to hire for the new hospitals treating COVID, but now they hired a very substantial number of nurses to for the vaccination campaign, and they paid like 50% more for these temporary jobs than are paid by the private sector in some cases. So we and our competitors lost a lot of nurses to the public sector and had to, of course, increase our offer in order to retain the minimum number that we need to operate. So this hopefully will then be over at some point when the emergency will be hopefully over. And then we will, of course, have the renewals that I just talked about, but it's way too early to draw any conclusion on what is the long-term cost of labor in the long run. And the other source of inefficiency this year was, of course, that with a low occupancy in the case of the nursing homes, you run into a situation where you cannot flex the costs because you need a minimum number of staff in every structure. And this applied to nursing homes. And in rehab, it was more linked to the fact that there was a very high volatility in the activity levels with three pandemics, waves, ups and downs, and you cannot adjust overnight. So that was a planning issue. So these are the main drivers of the cost of labor for last year and this year.
Thank you.
Vincenzo Benedetti, there are no more questions registered at this time.
Then I would like to thank all of you participating in this call. Thank you very much and have a good day.